You're listening to Sound Poetry. I am your host, David Gilmore.
You are listening to Sound Poetry on KTAH Radio Tacoma, low power FM 101.9. I'm your host, Steve Niebel, sitting in for David Gilmore, who is on hiatus, but will be back soon. Today our guest is Olympia poet Thomas A. Thomas. Thomas studied with Gregory Orr and Donald Hall at the University of Michigan, where he won both Hopwood Minor and Major awards in poetry. He later studied with Matthew Shinoda at Goddard College in the MFA program. His poems have appeared in Anesthesia Review, The Periodical Lunch, Writer's Digest, Oberon, and most recently in Femme Asia magazine. His full-length book, Getting Here, published in 2005, received an honorable mention in the 14th annual Writer's Digest International Self-Published Book Awards. His poem, Instead of God, is nominated for the Best of Net Prize and Anthology by the publisher Trio House Press. His poem, In a Time, was nominated for a pushcart and has been translated to Spanish, Serbian, and Bengali. Thomas has been an active member in the Olympia Poetry Network for many years, where he has twice been the featured reader in their monthly series. During the pandemic year of 2020, he has read for international and inclusive audiences in Cultivating Voices Facebook group with writers from Ireland, India, Canada, and numerous other countries, and was also featured in the 100,000 Poets for Change, a Toronto, Canada Zoom event with poets from four continents and eight time zones. So, Thomas, welcome to Sound Poetry.
Thank you.
So what do you have to read for us today?
Well, I've brought something old and something new. I have a favorite poem for warming myself up and releasing my tension. It's kind of a rant. It's kind of about writer's block or writer's doubt. The feeling you get when you don't really like anything you've written for a while. Its original title is Wouldn't It Be Nice?
So, you know, I wanted to ask a question also. I am kind of interested in this 38-minute poem about your commute from Steamboat Island to Tumwater. Can we talk about that after you read Rant?
Sure. Okay. Sure. Yeah, I wouldn't mind if somebody found it someplace to live.
Well, I'm intrigued by the concept, you know, I thought it was just kind of an interesting thing to talk about.
Okay, yeah. Rant. Wouldn't it be nice to write about a real woman, a woman who is real, whose eyes are not metaphysical eyes and would not terrify, not cause ecstatic visions of pain or violent visions of ecstasy, but the woman who would be warm, whose skin would give my fingers actual sensation, the woman who would breathe real air toward me across the table in the restaurant, which would be just a restaurant and not a dining place of the soul on which my immortal secret life depended. Its fireplace would not be a stage wherein our demonic earth wizards play out choreographic games explanatory of any of the depths of uncertain life and death irrelevancies. Now, wouldn't it be nice to eat dinner at that restaurant? To have dinner on a table which refused to become an operating table on which I am to dissect my own body, which is cooperating, which is falling apart neatly into organized piles of the gastrointestinal, vascular, nervous, skeletal, precisely, scientifically accurate divisions of flesh and spirit. It would be so nice if I could really take you to Chicago with me, and the highway would not become the Ouroboric earth-encircling serpent known to the ancient Norse as the Midgard serpent of uncertain spelling, for which the letters do not exist on this computer anyway. Wouldn't a real woman who was not a deer woman or a leopard with the second look, wouldn't she be a lot more fun? Wouldn't she heal me and pull me away from this keyboard before I ran, before I lay down on the wood floor crying tears, which are always forever, always only almost real tears?
That was really great. Love that. And that's about writer's block.
Well, it's about writer's doubt, maybe, where you just don't feel like you can get it quite right ever.
I tried to look up Ouroboric dictionary online, didn't have that word. Where is the origin of that, and what does it mean?
It's an archetypal symbol. I first met it in reading Carl Jung back in the day in the 70s. But it's also the snake biting its own tail.
Oh, okay. Sure, I've seen that.
The Ouroboros is I guess it's kind of like the Mobius strip or something, too. It's life, death, the circle of creation and destruction. And
right.
For the Norse, the Midgard serpent is actually like the same as the Atlantic Rift, is one idea about that. The rift that encircles the earth.
Yeah.
the dragon eating its tail that encircles the earth.
You mentioned yesterday a poem that's 38 minutes long when you read it. It's about your commute from Steamboat Island to Tumwater. And for one thing, I was wondering, how did you happen to end up with such a lengthy piece of work?
Well, that's an interesting question, and it does have to do with, I actually spent 10 years writing it, I think. It started out, of course, smaller than it became. I didn't know it was going to be 14 separate poems that more or less can stand alone, I hope, and, 4,000 words. But it was sort of a meditation. As my wife grew ill with her early onset Alzheimer's, I had more and more family demands, and I was working full time, and really the only time I found myself alone and able to be thoughtful and meditative was in that drive to work and back. And so I just started making observations, basically. And then it came to me at some point that it could happen like in one commute, in a way, but the whole 10-year story would, be going to work and coming back home, but all these observations would happen between. And it's political, and it's echo poetry, and it's also about family.
Is this a text piece if you published it, or do you have an audio version of it somewhere?
It's on my Facebook profile page. You can find in the videos. It's a featured reading from March of 2019 at Olympia Poetry Network.
Okay.
So It's not published anywhere. It hasn't found a home yet.
Okay. Do you want to read a little piece of it, or you have planned what you want to do today? Thank you for talking about that. Anyway, I'm still intrigued.
Well, you know what? There is one part, just because I'm kind of interested too, but this incorporates so much of my being and my own personal history, and it's about the country's history too. But here's one that's appropriate in the age of Black Lives Matter too. It's number 7 in the series. It's called The Whiteness of the School Bus. It's a black and blue, mostly black, barely light sky under which I am driving, just beyond the place of the wasted deer. A faint, pale moon sinks west behind as light fog curtains move over highway, blend within dark trees of silhouette hills. Regina Spektor is singing her homage to Billie Holiday on the radio, singing, "I could sing this song so blue it would make you cry." And she mentions the branches of a poplar tree. So I'm thinking about strange fruit when these two big white shapes loom. Yes, really loom out of the fog bank ahead. The fog thickens, darkens as we enter its shadow. My headlights light up, a bluebird logo on a white bumper. So I'm remembering school days and school children and my own lamented youth, and then realize I never saw an all-white school bus with no writing on the sides, as I see when I begin to pass the first one. And those windows, so high up and so small. So now I know I'm looking at prisoner buses that must have started out under cover of darkness some time ago. And now in this half light and fog, it's like I'm seeing two white whales full of men that you and I don't want to remember being taken who knows where in this spectral dawn, which they might only glimpse through tiny dark windows. And I'm thinking it is a true shame what we have done, turning yellow school buses into white prison buses, school kids into prisoners, bluebirds into blue jailbirds, and Regina and Billy are ringing in my ears, and it is all breaking my heart. And this is how I come to I-5, accompanied by white whales in fog, with big fat tears in my eyes, rolling toward the last valley, seeing far off above fog banks and black foothills, those three peaks of a mountain once and sometimes still called Tahoma. And off its left shoulder sparkles white, the morning star, Venus.
I love that. That's really great. So there's 14 parts to that actually.
That was, part 7, The Whiteness of the School Bus.
I thought that was really great. It was very moving to me. So what else you got planned for us?
Well, that was outside the plan, but I love when that happens because that did feel good to read. Well, I wanted to read old and new. Besides writer's block, sometimes I have nothing to say. This poem is yours, but you must look carefully for it. This poem is there among the rocks where the gray rain falls on lichen, moss, and marmot shit. It is growing there in the marmot shit. Rather, it is the marmot running down the hill from you. Walk quietly. It hears you stumbling clumsily after it. This poem has little respect for you, because this tundra has no need you can answer. It was happy lying in the sun with the hawks circling above it. And there you are, still tracking the marmot which this poem has already left.
I'm a little bit familiar with marmots, especially in the Olympics. There are a lot of marmots. And the thing that I've always noticed about them, they're a fairly large rodent, but they're also really shy. Like you think, I would like to get closer to that marmot. Well, I'm sure you always have a camera with you. By the way, I really liked your pictures on the Banyan Review that you had with that.
Oh, thank you.
Photographs. And so you have your camera, you try to take a picture of a marmot. Blue herons are like that too. They're right there. And they're in the open right there standing on the edge of the water. And the minute you get close enough where your lens really has them, where you think you're going to get them framed, they take off.
Yes, I wonder, because I don't think humans prey on herons. I wonder why they're so nervous about us. Of course, we're not a very trustworthy species.
Yeah, I would say so.
Oh, man. Well, speaking of herons, then, that's a good segue. And it was also in the Banyan Review that instead of God appeared.
Oh, right.
That's a good one to read.
It certainly is.
So instead of God, say heron, say kingfisher. Say, that was the 10th summer my wife was dying and I was not. Instead of God, say a name like Anne or Grace or Joy. Say the one who broke me open in a new way this wholly unexpected time. Instead of God, say love. Let Joy in the side door, and she sits in the kitchen now in the warmth of fresh bread and cinnamon and honey. Instead of God, say only desire, want. Say pomegranate, poplar tree. Say stay. Say please. Say thank you. Say love again, dark and light. And forever.
I also really like that one. Well, I liked everything that I've been able to read of yours.
So that's the one that's nominated for the Best of the Net,
right?
From the Banyan Review. And I probably first read it at Cultivating Voices, which is actually rooted in Olympia as well. Sandy Yanone, the founder, well, her and her sister and Don Kreider formed this shortly after lockdown started, and now there's over 3,000 or close to 3,000 members of Cultivating Voices, and it's a really, really remarkable group and a remarkably safe and inclusive place for any voices. And it's probably where I read In a Time first. I read it there, and somebody there said that was a publishable poem. Why don't you send it to Femme Asia magazine? FemAsia.com or FemAsiaMagazine.com, yeah. So let's see if I can It was October of 2020 when it was published. I wrote it in August of 2020, and it's about August and birds and some other stuff. But it's called In a Time. There are times when I feel trapped in time, and this is one of those times. The year 2020, a time in the impossible future I expected not to be alive to see. And the month is August, and August is the month and time of litany. It is the month of my one wedding, the month of gaining a son who could have been 31. It is the month of our first walk along the salt shore together, and of my beloved's first illness, harbinger of worse to come. Month of our lost mortgage, of bankruptcy, August of learning my only brother had renal cell carcinoma, would follow my father into that hard darkness so soon. The month of disability determination, August of a diagnosis at last, terribly final as it is. And it is still the month berries ripen along humid vines, corn ears swell in steamy fields as fawns fatten out of their spots, gorging on clover blossoms and dandelion blooms, as seal pups bask between fishing lessons, as fingerlings flash to avoid shadows, as kingfisher young learn not to make shadows as they dive. It is the month apples begin to blush at the thought of falling. Time of joy upon joy, joy upon sorrow, time of sorrow, time of love upon love upon love.
I thought that was a great juxtaposition of imagery. You're incorporating your own tragedy into that, and but yet pointing out that in the world out there that there's still beautiful things happening and along with the tragedy. I really enjoyed that. There's something hopeful about the way you put those images together, I think.
Yes, that's what I see. It's nature is one of the things that's one of the loves that's kept me alive through all the trials of illness and death. And basically, it's about love wins.
Right, yeah.
You know, and life goes on, and the young animals grow up. And
yeah. But,
so that you was know, in a ahead. Time.
Yeah.
So that's some heavy stuff.
Well, you know, I think that, you know, actually, you know, life is like that. You know, it's life is not all a bowl of cherries, is it?
And that's really what I believe. Why poetry is important to the times, but also just to individual survival. It's what keeps my spirit alive anyway. It reminds me that there is beauty alongside the sorrow and the terror.
Yeah.
And
so you said that you made a comment that made it sound like you're going to read something that is of a lighter nature.
Oh, I don't know.
But that's not, I'm not trying to tell you where to go.
I also have shorter poems. I admire haiku. My mom handed me a book when I was 11, Alan Watts, The Way of Zen.
I remember Alan Watts.
Alan Watts, and I was about 11, and I was off to the meditation, the monastery. Short poems, an Asian influence too. I mean, the Japanese sensibility and the Chinese sensibilities are in my work as well. I love the intensity of saying as much as you can with as few syllables possible, you know. And sometimes I change them. You just made me think I call it a hyper haiku, because it's multiple haiku in one poem. In the apartment. So this is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 haiku in the Americanized 5-7-5 syllables, 3 lines. In the apartment, there is an old sink with 2 separate faucets. Hot and cold, both drip. The wood floor creaks now, did not all summer. Couch creaks, too. The air is dry. A fire truck passes, and a Volkswagen follows, then a Chevrolet. When the bathtub fills and the water is turned off, its faucets drip, too. I lie in the tub, listening to the drops, watch my body float, sink, far off through the pipes, there is the sound of a train switching track for track.
Now that was fun.
Yeah. It's capturing that moment. I know a poem has actually happened when number one, there's a silence after. but also, I think when time stops, that's when I know that somehow, you know, the poem has created its moment. It's like sometimes I think of it as like the cosmic foam, you know, this one bubble of meaning has appeared, and it's like its own cosmos, its own moment that is separate from other moments. Well, here's one. We'll do a romantic one.
Okay.
I do. You know, I have been called a lyric poet, but I like everything. I mean, and I sometimes say I'm anything but an occasional poet, but then I don't know what else a poem is if it's not about an occasion, something that's happened to one. This isn't really, but this one's been translated into Serbian as well as Spanish, of all things. It's called To a Woman. The suddenness of the sunlight this gray day almost wakes you. Light breaking yellow over the leaves, spreading over rock spaces. Yellow on the water sliding down green rock. Yellow again, asking for the lemon flames to come out from you, to rise from your shoulders, from under your dark hair. Still they don't come. The air thickens on your skin, turns blue, and keeps it from his skin, his teeth. This spring comes, these four hawks turning above the suddenness of the clouds. Sun at their center flashes down yellow light like pollen on your eyelids. Cloud shadows let free the red horses, the black bulls of your hair. Even your fingernails become the yellow of wheat grains or of sunflower petals. So you want to come outside yourself, outside that envelope of air, blue as the blood longing to flow out from your veins. Want to touch these bouquets of trees, the night fog, the moon, which comes to you.
Well, it's really been great having you here today. I've really enjoyed listening to your poetry.
Well, thank you. Thank you for the opportunity. I've really appreciated this, and I've enjoyed it too. I've enjoyed the talk and the roaming. Well, I think you're gonna hear it first here. I just wrote this last Sunday, I guess, after my late brother's birthday. He's the one that died the same year and in a time, the same year as my father. But he was a gentle soul and somebody, well, I'll just read it. Not too late. Someone brought me a gift of bulbs for fall planting. They were thinking of spring and a dazzle of narcissus sprinkled among daffodils and tete-a-tete in sunlight. As I poked through moss or grass to press bulbs in soil this sunny day in October, the recollection comes. How gently Peter would place and cover the rooty orbs just so in the earth, patting them in for winter's dreaming. How tenderly my brother removed the pierced leaves that covered their sprouts after late snows or early rains. How snow slakes the thirst of flower beds we both loved, those springs in Illinois, and how I carry these memories. As I kneel and dig little empty spaces in the dirt to fill, sun warms a breeze, shadows lengthen, and leaves tick time. My hand feels my brother's hand, patting warm earth as mine does now, with nothing but love and kind care. Another gift, white clouds suspended in blue, two hawks circling. Not too late.
Thank you, Thomas. You've been listening to Thomas A. Thomas, Olympia poet, and this is Sound Poetry. I'm Steve Niebel, sitting in for David Gilmore, who is on hiatus, and I'm sure David will be back soon. Thanks again, Thomas, for reading for us today.
Oh, thank you for having me, for sure.